Dear God, our Heavenly Father, we come before you again on this Sabbath day, giving you grateful thanks for the opportunity to learn more of your word, to come together as a group in fellowship. We thank you for this opportunity, and we ask for your blessing and inspiration upon this Bible study, and also your blessing upon the food we'll partake of and the activity afterwards, and also protection on our way home. Thank you so much, and we ask all these things by the name and authority of Jesus Christ. Amen. Today we're going to be going into Genesis chapter 25. We left off last time in Genesis chapter 24, where God blessed the endeavors of Isaac's servant to obtain a wife for Abraham's servant to obtain a wife for Isaac, and the success that he had, and that Isaac did actually marry Rebekah then. Then we come to a new section in Genesis chapter 25. Genesis chapter 25 and verse number 1. And we read, Abraham again took a wife, and her name was Keturah. Now, commentators have all kinds of questions about this particular verse here, because it's not stated in the scriptures exactly when this particular wife, Keturah, was taken as a wife. Just the fact is that she did become one of his wives. Now the name Keturah seems to be associated with incense, and it appears that several of Keturah's sons were involved in the international spice trade. So they were businessmen and went in caravans and dealt with spices. This wife's name being Keturah. Jameson Fawcett and Brown adds from the Hebrew that this word, our English word again, is better translated added and took. And Jameson Fawcett and Brown adds this. This record was postponed to form part of the winding up of Abraham's biography. So Abraham lived 37 years after the death of Sarah. 37 years. So at some point, we don't know exactly when, and it could even have been before, but he took this wife, Keturah. And this section of scripture that we're going to be looking at in chapter 25 seems to be inserted to show Abraham as being a father of nations. Remember, God in the promises over and over again said, you're going to be a father of nations, many nations. And we're going to see a listing of the descendants of Keturah, this other wife, also the descendants of Ishmael, and also the descendants of Isaac. So all of these, so all of these insertions here are to show the descendants of the other wives, and including Sarah, him being a father of many nations. Okay, now, the descendants of Keturah, verse number 2 and 3. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Jokshan begot Sheba, Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashram, Letushim, and Leomim. Most of these descendants of Keturah and Abraham here are basically Arabian peoples. And these, the descendants of Keturah, intermarried with the descendants of Ishmael and Esau. So when we look at Arabian stock people today, many of them are Ishmaelites, but also they are descendants of Keturah and Esau. And there was a lot of intermarrying and intermingling between these descendants. Verse number 2, Midian was the father of the Midianites. I'm sure you've heard that term, the Midianites. They basically were located in the Sinai Peninsula and the Arabian Peninsula, where Saudi Arabia is today. Remember the account of Joseph's brothers selling him into slavery? They sold Joseph to the Midianites. But they were also interestingly called Ishmaelites as well. Moses married a Midianite. And also the Midianites and Edomites troubled Israel later on when they came into the Promised Land, on their way to the Promised Land. So You find that in Numbers chapter 25. So the Midianites do have some significant history in the Old Testament scriptures. And the first account that we're going to come across in Genesis is where they sell, the brothers of Joseph sell him into slavery to the Midianites. Okay, verse number 4. Here's the sons of Midian: Ephah, Epher, Henoch, Abidah, and Eldah. And these were all children of Keturah. And again, they would have significance dealing with Israel. Here's a map of the Sinai Peninsula and part of what's known as Saudi Arabia today. And right there, I don't know if you can see it on the screen or not, but it says Midian right there. This here is the Sinai Peninsula. Over here is Egypt. And up here is Palestine, the land of Canaan. Down here, in this area here, which is cut off, is Arabia, which is known as Saudi Arabia today. So to the very eastern section of Arabia is where the Midianites made their home base back in those ancient times. The Aid to Bible Understanding says this: at times the Bible refers to them as Ishmaelites. And so sometimes they're called Midianites, sometimes they were called Ishmaelites, because there was a lot of intermarrying between them. And you can see that in Genesis chapter 37. This may imply that the sons of Ishmael and Midian were much alike in their way of life, and there may have been intermarriage between the two peoples. Basically, they intermarried and became Arabian peoples. We'll see this in verse number 6. I'm getting a little bit ahead here. But Isaac would send them eastward, away from Isaac, Abraham. He sent them eastward, away from Isaac, his son, to the country of the east. So they're going to go east from Palestine and basically begin to go into the land of Arabia and make their homeland, Arabia, east of Palestine. That's where the Midianites would be located. Verse number 5 and 6, and Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. So even though he had all these other descendants, the Midianites, the Ishmaelites, the descendants of Isaac are going to get the major part of the promises. Verse number 5. But Abraham, verse number 6, gave gifts to the sons of the concubines which Abraham had while he was still living. He sent them eastward, away from Isaac, his son, to the country of the east. So basically, again, east of Palestine, most of these peoples went to the land of Arabia and became known as Arabs. Abraham's other sons did receive gifts, but Isaac received the majority of the promises and blessings. He may have sent them away, again, to the east, as Ishmael was, because, so that they wouldn't pose a threat to Isaac. Now we come to the death of Abraham in verse number 7. This is the sum of the years of Abraham's life which he lived. 175 years was the age of Abraham when he died. And amazingly, 100 of those years was around the area of Canaan, to the very southern part of Canaan. Of course, his descendants are going to actually go in and occupy Canaan in the future, him living to the southern border. But 100 years in that area. Then Abraham breathed his last and died a good old age, an old man full of years, and was gathered to all of his people. The way that they would do in the ancient times, the descendants and all the relatives would gather around one of the patriarchs when they would die. And that's what was happening here. Verse number 9. And his sons Isaac and Ishmael, even though they had their differences, they came together here at Abraham's death, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried, and Sarah his wife. Remember, we talked about that in a previous Bible study, and I even showed a cave of an architect going through a cave where there was bones. Abraham had purchased a burial cave from the Hittites, where Sarah was buried, and Abraham was buried there as well. Verse number 11, and it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt at Bear Lahai Roy. I've got it in a little small print there. You can't read it on the screen, but that Bear Lahai Roy is where Hagar had been delivered when she gave her prayer when Sarah had banished her away. Hagar was fleeing to Egypt, and they were out in the desert, her and her son Ishmael, and they were about to die. And she put him under a shade, under a plant where there was shade, and she prayed to God, "Please don't let the son die." And a well sprang up, and they were both delivered. And God heard her prayer. It's interesting. Isaac was living at this time in that area. And I think it has significance that God heard her prayer, and Abraham was calling on God as well. Isaac was calling on God. Verse number 9 and 10, Isaac and Ishmael reunite, despite their differences, to bury Abraham in the same cave as Sarah. Now the story, we saw the sons of Midian, how they branch out and become mighty peoples. Now we're going to take a look in verses 12 through 18, the family history of Ishmael. God promised him to be a great nation as well. And again, we've talked about this. Ishmael became the great part of the Arab peoples. Verse number 12. Now this is the genealogy of Ishmael, Abraham's son, who Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's maidservant, bore to Abraham. Remember in chapter 17, verse 20, the prophecy was that as for Ishmael, he shall beget 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. We're going to read about those 12 princes now in verse 13. And these were the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names, according to their generations. The firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth, then Kedar, Abdiel, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadar, Tima, Jeter, Naphish, and Kedema. Now these are the 12 princes that will make a great nation, the descendants coming from Ishmael. And again, these are mostly Arabian tribes. One of the interesting ones to point out here is Kedar, located right there. Muhammad, the founder of Islam, the religion of Islam, traced his lineage back to Kedar. So a direct descendant of Ishmael through one of his sons, Kedar, one of the 12 princes. Verse 16, the summary here. These were the sons of Ishmael, and these were their names by their towns and their settlements, 12 princes according to their nations. And they would go on to be a mighty people. Verse 17, these were the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. And he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. So the 12 princes and all their descendants gathered around as Ishmael was dying. Verse number 18, they dwelt from Havilah as far as Shur, which is east of Egypt as you go towards Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren. So the geographical description here that they're going to live to the east of Palestine going towards Assyria, basically the Arabian Peninsula to the east. I have that in bold letters, the last part of 18. He died in the presence of all his brethren. That's not a real good translation, our English translation, that he died in the presence of all his brethren. Okay, here's a map here for you. The first part of verse 18, it says, from Havilah as far as Shur, okay, Havilah is located down in here. Here's the wilderness of Shur. So they began living in this area here and eventually would go to the east. Again, Assyria being up in this area here. And then they'd go down into here, what's known as Saudi Arabia today. The last part of verse number 18, which I said is not a good translation in English, is better translated in the New International Version. And it reads like this. He lived in hostility toward all his brothers. That was a prophecy that was made to Hagar in chapter 16, verse number 12. And this prophecy began to be fulfilled and is continuing on today. the Arab peoples living in hostility to all their brethren. And we've seen that happen. It's continuing on today, this family conflict going on, and we see it in the Middle East even today. Verse number 19. Now, we switch from, we saw the generations from Midian, from Keturah, then from Ishmael, now from Isaac. This is the genealogy of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian, of Padam Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. So remember in chapter 24, God had worked it out with Abraham's servant to go and get Rebekah and bring her back to be his wife. Verse number 20 points to Jacob's journey, because Jacob, Isaac's son, is going to go back to the land of Paddan Aram, which is the land of Haran, where Laban's family was, where Rebekah came from. So this is kind of warming us up for the fact that Jacob is going to be going back to that land to look for a wife for himself. Verse number 21. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. There's something different here now about what Isaac does that Abraham, his father, didn't do. What did Isaac and Sarah do when she couldn't bear children? They got impatient. They got impatient, and Sarah gave him her handmaid. What does Isaac do that's different? He calls on God. He pleads for God, which I think is part of the reason he was hanging around the area where Hagar had received the blessing of the water when they were about to die, because God heard her prayer. And Isaac is calling on God. Here we see this example, asking for a child, and the Lord granted her plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But, verse 22, the children, which indicates more than one in her womb, struggled together within her. And she said, if all is well, why am I like this? So she went to inquire of the Lord. She's got two children in her. Notice I put in bold letters this word struggled, our English word struggled. There was something going on within her womb that doesn't normally happen. She says, there's something that's not right here. She goes to and asks God for why this is happening. She pleaded in verse 21. It's interesting that Isaac pleaded for his wife because she was barren. The Hebrew term is used elsewhere to remove some serious illness. So in this prayer that he was asking for healing, is what he was asking for. And again, the contrast between Abram and Isaac. Isaac prayed and God heard, whereas Abraham, his father, had been impatient. Verse 22, Isaac's prayer is answered, and she has more than one child. Again, note the word struggled, our English word struggled. In Hebrew, it can be translated smashed or crushed. And that shows the violence of the struggle that was going on in her womb. Word commentary adds this. Their first battlefield, Isaac and Jacob, or the children that are going to come out, their first battlefield is in their mother's womb, Jacob and Esau. Their descendants fought continuously. One of the descendants of Esau was Amalek, and we'll get to that later on in Genesis. Amalek was the father of the Amalekites. When the children of Israel came out of Egypt and crossed through the Red Sea, the first tribe that came against them in war was the Amalekites, descendants of Esau. The struggle that went on in Rebekah's womb continued on throughout Israel's history. In fact, there's rabbinical teachers in Palestine today that say the Arab Palestinians there are descendants of the Amalekites. And they're the ones that are fighting with the Jews today. So the struggle that was happened in Rebecca's womb continues on even to our day and time. She went to inquire of the Lord, and this is used elsewhere in scriptures as consulting a prophet. She wanted to know what was going on in her womb. And she's going to get the answer in the form of a prophecy concerning Jacob and Esau. And this prophecy that God is going to give to Rebecca, she asked God what was going on, looks to the time that Jacob, eventually Israel, will dominate Esau, which became known as the nation of Edom. Okay, here's God's answer to her. He says, "The Lord said to her, 'Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger.'" So God told her very plainly the struggle that's going on. There's two nations, and the older is going to come out on top of the younger. And this is very important because this was God's will in the situation. Isaac wanted to change it. We'll get into that here later on. Isaac wanted to bless the older one. But from God's will in the prophecy, the younger one was the one to be blessed. Keep that in mind. Okay, this phrase here, "the older shall serve the younger," expositors puts this all into perspective in the history of the Bible. It says this, "As far back as chapter 4, the narrative has portrayed God approving and choosing the younger and the weaker through whom he would accomplish his purpose and bring about his blessing." What that's saying is he generally chooses the younger. The offering of Cain, the older brother, was rejected, whereas the offering of the younger brother, Abel, was accepted. Isaac was accepted over his older brother, Ishmael. Rachel was chosen over her older sister, Leah. Joseph, the younger brother, was chosen over all the rest. So in all these cases, the younger comes out on top. The intention behind each of these reversals was the recurring theme of God's plan of grace. The blessing was not a natural right, as a right of a firstborn son would be. Rather, God's blessing is intended to those who have no other claim to it. They all received what they did not deserve. In ancient times, and I've mentioned this over and over again, it was always the firstborn who got the greatest amount of the family inheritance. Even if you had 12, 15 sons, the firstborn always got the biggest chunk of the pie. But in God's plan and purpose, the younger one is the one that always gets it. The reversal of the way man had set it up in the ancient times. So it's grace according to God's will and plan. Those that don't have claim to the greatest inheritance is the one that gets it. Bible Knowledge Commentary adds this, "God's fulfillment of his promise to Abraham was carried out by his election of Jacob. From the outset, the birth of the nation of Israel was supernaturally superintended. God often reverses man's natural order, for his ways are not man's ways." And then, of course, the younger is chosen over the older. And that's what we're going to see. In Isaac, Isaac wanted to give the promises to his older son. And we're going to see that, but it wasn't God's will at all. Okay. Here's a companion scripture, Romans 9, verse number 11, verse 11 through 12. "For the children not yet being born, nor having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God, according to election, might stand, not of works, but of him who calls. It was said to her, 'The older shall serve the younger.'" And again, that was God's will, and the Apostle Paul is bringing this out. Verse 24. "So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. Okay, Esau means red. It's a play, and reddish, red, and it's a play on the name Edom. Esau's descendants would become known as the nation of Edom. Also notice that there was a hairy garment. He was hairy, a hairy child. It's a play on the name of Seir, which was the name of the territory of Edom. So it all pointed to the descendants of Esau. Jacob means heel catcher, but it also means supplanter, deceiver, excuse me. The struggle between Esau and Jacob continued and would continue down throughout history, even after the Israelites came out of Egypt, and it would continue on and goes on today. Verse 27, so the boys grew. Esau was a skillful hunter and a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Here we're going to have the seeds of family conflict. It's amazing how the family of Abraham started out with family conflict and it continues on. Esau was loved by Isaac because he was a hunter and he loved to eat of his game. Rebekah loved Jacob. Jacob was a herder. Esau was a hunter, a man of the open field, and Jacob was a herdsman like his father and his grandfather. Family conflict developing. Isaac loved Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. But remember, and I pointed this out earlier, God's intention was that Esau, the older, was not going to receive the blessing. It would go to the younger, Jacob. Verse 29, now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. We're going to see in the next chapter, we're about to get into that, there was a famine in the land. Most likely, Esau, being the hunter, went out to hunt, but because there was a famine, there wasn't much game to be had. There wasn't an abundance of game. He comes back, he's starving, and he's weary, he's wore out. Verse 30, Esau said to Jacob, please feed me that same red stew, for I am weary. Therefore, his name was called Edom. He was weary. He could not find any game. And as I mentioned, we're going to see in the next chapter, there's a famine in the land. Now, one thing I want to point out before we go on. Normally, if your brother comes in and says, I'm starving, give me something to eat, you would give him something to eat. Jacob has other plans. He's very deceptive. This is going to change, however, we're going to see later on in Genesis. Jacob changes his attitude and his ways, but right now he's very unconverted in his attitude. Verse 31, Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I'm about to die. What is this birthright to me? Now remember, I've pointed out, the birthright meant everything back in those ancient times. You got the biggest chunk of the pie. And Esau's saying, it doesn't mean anything to me. Then Jacob said, swear to me this day. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. And he ate and drank, arose, and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Very important to focus in on that, because this is going to come into play with Esau later on. He's going to make a claim to this birthright later on, but he loses it. He sold it. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown points out how important this birthright firstborn privilege was. Number one, you can find this in Deuteronomy 20, there was a double portion of the inheritance from the parents to the firstborn. Number two, the rule over the family, other members of the family by the firstborn, Genesis 27. Whether or not the firstborn possessed the sacred dignity of the family priest went to the firstborn, Exodus chapter 4. Also, the promise of the possession of Canaan as a future inheritance. And finally, number five, access to the fellowship with God through ordinances of his appointment. Very, very important, this birthright that Esau was willing to sell for a pot of stew. In the last part of verse 34, Esau despised his birthright. He did not care for it. but it was so very, very important. That ends chapter 25. Now we come to chapter 26. And chapter 26, now I'm not going to go into all of chapter 26 because there's similarities between Isaac and what he did with his wife and what Abraham did with his wife in calling her his sister. And also that he stays in the land of Gerar. What I want to point out to you, and the Bible Knowledge Commentary points this out, some critics will say that what happened with Isaac here in chapter 26 in the land of Gerar with another Abimelech was a confusion of the tradition with Abraham. They tried to play it down. But it's very, very important, chapter 26, because this shows that the promises continued on to Isaac in what he's going to be doing here. Even though it's a repetition of the family history of what his father Abraham had done. Okay. Verse number one of chapter 26. I mentioned this earlier. There was a famine in the land, besides the first famine, which was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of Philistines, in Gerar. All right? So this wasn't the same famine that Abraham had gone through. And most likely this is why Esau was starving and couldn't find any game. Okay? Abraham had been treated well in Gerar by Abimelech. And God was watching over Isaac by having him go to Gerar because of another famine. So this most likely was not the same Abimelech of chapter 20 dealing with Abraham because 90 years had gone by. This is most likely another ruler, Abimelech. Okay, verse number 2. Then the Lord appeared to him and said to Isaac, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land which I shall tell you." All right? This is important right here because normally during the time of famine in the ancient Middle East, people would go to Egypt. Why? Because of the Nile River. The Nile River overflowed and they irrigated the land and were able to make crops. So Egypt could go through times of famine very easily. And so Abraham, when he was faced with famine, he went to Egypt. Later on, his descendants are going to go to Egypt with famine as well. But God says, don't go to Egypt. Go to a land which I will show you. And that's going to be the land of Gerar, where Abimelech is the king. Dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make descendants multiply as the stars, your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. And I will give to your descendants all these lands, and your seed, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. So God was testing Isaac like he had Abraham back in chapter 12. Get out of this land and go to a land that I will show you. He says, don't go to Egypt. And I will give you all of these promises that I swore to Abraham. They'll be yours. And we're going to see that Isaac does obey. Isaac was commanded by God to do what Abraham had done, to go to a land which I will show you. This is the reason for the blessings that God promised. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And this verse underscores the thoroughness of Abraham's obedience. And then we see here in verse number 7, so Isaac dwelt in Gerar. He didn't go to Egypt. He did as God said. He obeyed. And he went to the land of Gerar. Now he makes this mistake that his father made, following in his footsteps. Verse number 7, and the men of the place asked about his wife, and he said, she is my sister. For he was afraid to say, she is my wife, because he thought, lest the men of the place kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold. So we see that Isaac had obeyed God as he had commanded him to not go to Egypt, and because Egypt was a land of refuge, but he did not go there. But, however, out of fear of his life, Isaac deceives Abimelech just as his father had done. Okay. Now, I'm going to skip, for time's sake, some of these verses. I'll be sending this out to you so that you can look at this at home. But the story follows the same pattern as what Abraham had done. He said that my wife is my sister, and Abimelech comes back thinking that she was his sister. But then he tells the rest of his people, don't touch her, because this man is a man of God. And he who touches this man shall surely be put to death. And he made a royal decree. Again, it's a very similar pattern to what had happened to Abraham. And for time's sake, I'm going to skip over this right now. And we're going to go to verse number 12. And get back with Isaac. Then Isaac sowed in the land, talking about the land of Gerar where he was at, and reaped in that same year 100-fold. And the Lord blessed him. Remember, God said, dwell in this land and I will bless you. God is blessing him. Notice 100-fold. Matthew 13, Christ had this in the parable of the sower and the seed. That is the best possible crop you could have in Palestine. And what's amazing about this, we just read previously, there was a famine in the land. And yet God blessed him 100-fold in the crops that he had put out. This is the only time mentioned that any of the patriarchs sowed and harvested crops. They were mostly herdsmen. But Isaac was blessed both in crops and herds, as we'll see in chapter 14. And it was 100-fold blessing, an abundant crop in a year of famine in the Middle East. Verse 13, the man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous. For he had possessions of flocks, possessions of herds, and a great number of servants. So the Philistines envied him. You can imagine now, you got this famine throughout the Middle East. Here in the land of Gerar, all the Philistines, these pagan people, by the way, are looking at this man. He's got herds. He's got servants. He's got crops 100-fold. They're envious of him, very much so. Now, I'm going to skip over some of these verses for time's sake again. And what happens is with the Philistines envying him, they begin to stop up all the wells that Abraham had dug. Remember, I told you before that wells were very important in the desert land. That's the way they fed their herds. It was a sign of God's blessing. The Philistines, to get back at Isaac, they start stopping up, plugging up the wells of Abraham. But then Isaac's servants go back and unplug them. And there's this process in these next verses of the Philistines plugging them up and Isaac unplugging them until finally the Philistines gave up. And Abimelech calls for a treaty between Isaac because they recognize that God was with them and they weren't going to stop Isaac in any way, shape, or form. So that's to summarize these next scriptures. But again, for time's sake, I'm going to skip over these. You can look at these at home and at your own leisure. Okay. I want to get to the part where the treaty is made with Abimelech. Okay, right here. Verse number 28. They said, we have certainly seen that the Lord is with you. They couldn't stop Isaac any way, shape, or form in stopping up the wells. So we said, let there now be an oath between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm. Since we have not touched you, and since we have done nothing to you but good, and have sent you away in peace, you are now the blessed of the Lord. They finally realized that Isaac was blessed. They couldn't do anything, and they even say, you are the blessed of the Lord. They recognize this. Verse number 30 through 31, so he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. Then they arose early in the morning and swore an oath with one another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. Okay, this was a sign of recognition between them, and they made a pact and a treaty. Verse 32, but it came to pass in that same day that Isaac's servants came to him and told him about the well which they had dug and said to them, we have found water. So they called it Sheba, Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. And again, this was a sign of God's blessing for them. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and skip now to verse 34. The story shifts from that, from the Philistines and Isaac, and goes back to Esau, the last couple verses here. The last couple verses show how unfit Esau was for God's blessing. Remember, he said he didn't want anything to do with it. But notice this. When Esau was 40 years old, he took wives, Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. And they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. Remember, Abraham didn't want Isaac marrying any of the Hittites, the people of the land, because they were so terribly pagan. That's why he sent his servant to his homeland to bring back Rebekah. But Esau here, he goes ahead and marries Hittite women, pagan women. And it's a grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Just shows how unfit he was for the blessing. The religion of the Hittites was extremely pagan. They made their children walk through the fire. They did all kinds of extreme, terrible things. And God would later condemn them and others as well in the land of Canaan for defiling the land. Now that brings us to chapter 27. I want to give you some background here because this is Jacob's deceit to get the blessing from Isaac. Okay, Jacob's deception for the blessing. This is a story in which all of the family members were at fault. Each and every one of them, not just Jacob. Number one, Isaac knew of God's prophecy concerning the twins, that the older was to serve the younger. But he was determined to bless Esau because he loved him. He was a hunter and he loved his game. So he was wrong in this. Number two, Esau made an oath to Jacob and sold the birthright, but he still demanded the blessing. We'll see that later on. And Rebekah and Jacob, instead of having patience and waiting for God in faith, obtained the blessing by deception. Jacob's going to learn a whole lot from what this deception that he did later on with his uncle Laban. Okay, chapter 27. Verse number 1. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old, and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered him and said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Behold, I am old, and I do not know the day of my death." Now, this was kind of unusual because he said, "I'm about to die," but he was actually mistaken. He would live for 43 years more. But he thought he was going to die. And, you know, he thought he was going to die, so he's going to pronounce his blessing. Verse number 3. "Now, therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow. Go out to the field and hunt game for me. Make me savory food, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." And so, again, he knew that the older was to serve the younger, but he was determined to bless the older, Esau. It was the intention of Isaac to give the blessing to Esau. And again, he knew about the God's answer to Rebekah earlier, and he was about to thwart this blessing by giving it to Esau. Companion Bible adds this: "He, Isaac, must have heard that he was to bless Jacob, for it was by faith that he did so. The will of the flesh made him wish to bless Esau, but his faith in the end overcame the will of the flesh in him." Here's a companion scripture, Hebrews chapter 11, verse number 20. "By faith blessed Jacob and Esau concerning the things to come." Again, it was God's will for Jacob to receive the blessings, and that's the way it ended up and turned out. Okay, however, Rebekah, she knows that he's determined to bless Esau. She takes her own action to try to get Jacob the blessing by deception. Verse number 5. "Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob her son, saying, 'Indeed, I have heard your father speak to Esau your brother, saying, Bring me game, Make me savory food, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock, bring me there two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father, that he may eat it, and that he may bless you before his death. The Bible Knowledge Commentary adds this: Rebekah and Jacob, with a just cause, each tried to achieve God's blessing by deception without faith or love. Theirs would be the victory, but they would reap hatred and separation, for Rebekah would never see Jacob again. So, they make this plot to deceive Isaac, but she's never going to see Jacob again after this. Going back to, you reap what you sow. Jacob said to Rebekah, verse number 11, Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be a deceiver to him, and I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing." Jacob was fearful here regarding this particular plan. He wasn't guilty, but he was fearful that he was going to be cursed by his father instead of receiving a blessing. "I'm going to bring a curse on myself." But his mother said to him, verse 13, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me." And Rebekah's going to find out the hard way. Eventually, she's never going to see her son when he goes away after this. The Bible Knowledge Commentary: the blessing was in danger. All must be risked, including the possibility of a curse on Rebekah. And they were going to go ahead with this plot and this plan. "And he went," verse 14, "and got them and brought them to his mother. And his mother made savory food, just as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the choice clothes," that has significance, that phrase, "the choice clothes, of her elder son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son." Okay, the choice clothes, or if you're reading the old King James, it says the goodly raiment. The Companion Bible adds this, having to do with the firstborn: "All raiment in the East to this day marks the social rank and the position of the wearer. Among the Bedouins, the chief and the elder son wears a distinctive garment. This accounts for Jacob's desire here and for his act with Joseph. Being the garment of the firstborn, it doubtless denoted his official and priestly position." So having a certain clothing showed that you were the firstborn, the eldest, in the chiefest position. And it continues on to this day amongst many of in the eastern part of the world. That's what she was going to put on Jacob so that Isaac would realize that the clothing of the firstborn was put on him. Here's a companion scripture, Genesis 37:3. "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors." Joseph was the youngest, but Jacob put this choice raiment on him. Another one, Exodus 35:19. "The garments of ministry, for ministering in the holy place, the holy garments for Aaron, the priest, and the garments of his sons, to minister as priests." So again, significance of the choicest clothes of the elder. Verse 16, "And he put the skins of the kids of the goats on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Then she gave the savory food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob." Verse 18, "So he went to his father and said, 'My father.' And he said, 'Here I am. Who are you, my son?'" Remember, Jacob couldn't see well at this point. "Jacob said to his father, 'I am Esau, your firstborn.'" Okay, he wasn't Esau, but he did have the birthright promise. He had bought it. "I have done just as you told me. Please arise, sit and eat my game, that your soul may bless me. But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you found it so quickly, my son?" He was suspicious. And he said, "Because the Lord your God brought it to me." Notice Jacob says, "The Lord your God." At this particular time, Jacob was not fully on board with God. He would change this tune later on. We'll see this later on in Genesis. Verse number 19, he says, "I am your firstborn." And the Companion Bible adds, he probably said this because he had bought the birthright. Jacob was twice deceptive to his father about his identity in verse number 19, and that God had given him a successful hunt because he had taken of a goat from the field. But he's going to pay for this deception later on. Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near, that I may feel you, my son, whether you really are my son Esau or not." Now again, remember, he knew that the blessing was not to go to Esau, but he was still determined that way. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother's Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And again, this was according to God's will. This is the way that God had intended it to be for Jacob to receive this blessing. Although Jacob and Rebekah didn't have the faith, didn't have the patience to wait for God to work this out. Okay, Isaac was suspicious about his identity, but he did bless him, thinking that he was Esau, although the blessing was rightly to go to Jacob. Verse 24, then he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He said, "I am." He said, "Bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's game, that my soul may bless you." So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Verse 26, then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near now and kiss me, my son." And he came near, kissed him, and smelled the smell of his clothing, and blessed him, and said, "Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed." Isaac is asking for a farewell kiss here because he thinks he's dying, remember? And then he proceeds to bless him. Here's the blessing which God had intended for him to receive. "Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and the plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you." This phrase here, in verse number 28 of this blessing, the dew of heaven, Jameson Fawcett Brown points out, to an Oriental Eastern mind, this phraseology implied the highest flow of prosperity. This was the ultimate blessing you could receive. And part of the blessing was the fatness of the earth and the plenty of grain and wine. Word commentary points this out very interestingly. These are not the concerns of the nomadic hunter, but those of the settled farmer. So this remark is much more appropriate for Jacob than for Esau, looking forward to the settlement of the promised land. What this is saying is, he thinks he's blessing Esau, who's a hunter, but the blessing he's giving is the fatness of the earth, plenty of grain and wine, what a farmer would receive. So this was God's intention of this blessing, and it points to the children of Israel receiving these blessings in the promised land in the future. So again, all of this was according to God's plan and God's will. And it includes the domination over other nations. Verse 30. Now it happened as soon as Isaac, and this is right afterwards too, as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, exit stage left, in comes Esau. Esau came in from his hunting. He also made savory food and brought it to his father and said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that your soul may bless me." Again, remember, he sold the birthright. He hated it. "This blessing doesn't mean anything to me. Now he's going to claim it. Verse number 30 points out that Jacob had scarcely gone out, or as the Hebrew says, going was gone, a figure of speech for emphasis, that it was just shortly afterwards. How close that the blessing could have been stopped if Esau would have showed up a moment earlier. Verse 32, and his father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" So he said, "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Now I put this in bold letters because Esau is still claiming the firstborn rights, but he didn't have them anymore. He'd sold them to his brother. Verse 32:3, then Isaac trembled exceedingly. That, from the Hebrew, it translates, trembled a great trembling greatly. A figure of speech for emphasis. He shuddered in his boots, in other words, and said, Who is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate of all of it before you came, and I have blessed them. And indeed, he shall be blessed. So, Isaac is confirming the fact that I've already blessed Jacob, and indeed, he is going to be blessed. Then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate of all of it before you came, and I have blessed him. And indeed, he shall be blessed. I put this on the screen again to show the emphasis there. The Companion Bible adds this. Here is the confirmation of the faith that we read about in Hebrews chapter 11. His faith looked to the future for things not yet seen, the blessing that would happen to the descendants of Jacob. Hebrews chapter 11, verse number 20. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning the things to come. And of course, Jacob is going to receive the majority of the blessings, the dew of heaven, the fatness of the earth. Now when Esau heard the words of his father, verse 34, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me also, O my father." But he said, "Your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing." And Esau said, "Is he rightly not named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now he has taken away my blessing." And of course, he didn't own the birthright anymore, but he's still claiming it. Then he says, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" He's asking his father, "Is there a blessing left for me, poor pitiful me?" That's what we're going to read here in the next verse. Then Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Indeed, I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given to him as servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do for you now, my son?" And you can bet Esau was one red-hot, mad individual when he heard this. He says, "Behold, I have made him your Lord," as the old King James put it, "a mighty man unto you." And the blessing was irrevocable. It was going to Jacob. Verse 38, Esau said to his father, "Have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept, and you can bet he was crying. He repeats it twice, "Bless me, O my father." Going back to verse 34 as well. The Nelson Study Bible, which Miranda and Amanda have now, says this repetition suggests a prolonged period of grieving. In other words, he didn't just cry at that moment. He continued to cry over and over again for days because of this. Verse 39, then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, "Behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew from heaven." That translation, again, like the earlier one I pointed out in our English version, is not a good translation. Because looking at it sounds like he's going to have of the fatness here and of the dew of heaven, which Jacob received. But going back to the Hebrew, it doesn't mean that. This though, verse number 40, is the way Esau would live. "By your sword you shall live. You shall serve your brother, and it shall come to pass when you become restless that you shall break his yoke from your neck. Okay, I mentioned that verse number 39 is not a good translation in the English. Instead of the fatness and of the dew, from the Hebrew, it's properly translated away from the fatness and away from the dew of heaven. Esau's descendants would be desert dwellers. They would not receive the blessings that Jacob would. Away from the fatness and away from the dew. Esau and Edom would be located in the desert, southwest of the Dead Sea. Verse number 40, he says, by your sword you shall live. And Edom would be a militaristic nation throughout the Old Testament. Again, that his descendants, the Amalekites, were the first ones to attack Israel after they'd come across the Red Sea. But verse number 40, he says, you shall break his yoke from your neck. This had to do with, at the time of David, Edom was a part of the Israelite Empire, but later on, it gained its independence at the fall of Jerusalem, and they took revenge on Judah. When Jerusalem fell, the Edomites took their revenge on Judah and actually conspired against them with the Babylonians. So that prophecy did come to pass as well, that you shall break his yoke from your neck. Verse 41, as you can imagine, Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning of my father are at hand. I will kill my brother Jacob. This word hated, going back to the Hebrew, is rare and means a long and persistent hatred. And again, I've pointed this out. It continued on through the history of the Edomites. Esau was mistaken, though. He says, the days of mourning for my father are at hand, but Isaac would actually live many, many more years. But he says, I'm going to kill my brother. He planned to kill Jacob after his father's death, but again, he's going to live a long time. And the words of Esau, all the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, surely Esau, your brother, comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. This phrase, comforts himself concerning you, is a phrase suggesting that he's already ready to take action to kill him. He's ready to do it, and you better take note. Rebekah does not say that Esau is waiting till Isaac dies. She wants Jacob to flee immediately. Verse 43 and 45, and this is winding up the chapter now. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away. She says, okay, I need you to go hide. Go stay with my brother in our homeland. She says for a few days, as I have it underlined there. Rebecca's mistaken. Jacob's going to be there for 20 years. She's never going to see him again. Stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day? She mentions here, this is a double reference about until your brother's fury turns away, in verse 44 and verse 45, underscoring her concern for Jacob and the need for him to flee. And she says, why should I be bereaved of both of you in one day? Rebekah feared that if Esau killed Jacob, vengeance would come upon him and she would lose both of them. So another family member, if Esau killed Jacob, another family member would kill Esau and she'd lose them both. That's what she means by that, being bereaved of both of you in one day. Finally, verse number 46. And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. That was Esau's wives. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, the Hittites, like these who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me? And this was another reason for him to go to the homeland in Haran, She did not want him to take a Hittite wife like Esau had. And we're going to see in the next Bible study in chapter 28 that Jacob is going to flee to their homeland. I'm going to leave you now with lessons from these chapters. Chapter 25, and I think Word Commentary puts this very succinctly. It says, if God did not overlook his promises to Ishmael, how much more certainly he will fulfill those guaranteed by oath to Abraham about Isaac and his descendants. All those promises that God promised to Abraham would go to Isaac, and he would fulfill them. And that's what we see, one of the lessons of chapter 25. The many nations that would come from the loins of Abraham. Verse 26, we see that Isaac, or chapter 26, Isaac did obey God's command not to go to Egypt, and he was blessed tremendously. Remember, he received not only the blessing of stocks and herds, but also a hundredfold of the land for obeying God. Isaac followed his father's footsteps. He received promises, had trials, made mistakes, but he was blessed exceedingly. Chapter 27, Rebekah and Jacob's deception. The lesson there: God expects his servants and his disciples to carry out their spiritual responsibilities by faith. Have patience in God. Let him work things out. Don't take things into your own hands. Goes back to the principle, reaping what you sow. Jacob would reap what he had sown, the deception, by hardship and a bitter life under Laban, his uncle, in the process of building his character. We'll see that in the next. He's going to be there 20 years in the land of Haran, serving his uncle Haran. So his uncle Laban, I'm sorry. He's going to reap what he sows. That's a lesson. Okay, that brings us to the end. Any questions or comments?